I'm Leonida Inge. This is Test It from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, the tourism tightrope. The South is stunning, especially in the summertime. Most summers, you can find me traveling through it on my way to a favorite vacation destination, but this summer, travel season was limited to folks who were able enough or comfortable enough to take a vacation during the pandemic. It's not just the beaches and lakes that draw people to North Carolina when the weather is hot. Our rich history brings visitors from across the country to places that tell the stories of the past. And like others in the tourism industry, North Carolina's historic sites have had to adapt during the pandemic.
It has been one of the most compelling times in my life as a public humanities professional, because not only have we been faced with a pandemic, unlike any sort of public health crisis that we've ever seen, but also we've been in the midst of a racial justice uprising that deeply has us looking at, you know, the histories of race and power, particularly across the South. So that includes North Carolina and includes the narratives that we steward at our historic sites. My name is Michelle Lanier, and I am the Division Director for all of North Carolina's State Historic Sites and Properties. That's 25 historic sites from mountains to sea.
Michelle says the state's historic sites have seen a slight decrease in foot traffic, but nothing like what they expected. That's in large part because of all the site's outdoor spaces where visitors can walk around, social distance, and learn about the land's history.
All right, we got ready? We got everybody?
Somerset Place State Historic Site is a former plantation in North Carolina. It's one Michelle Lanier is charged to manage. This time last year, it hosted the usual volume of visitors and was home to some special events, too.
The littlest ones in the front, the little older ones just behind them, and we'll do it like that. So let's get that started, and then we'll be a lot closer to getting this done than we are now.
That's Wilhelmina Wilson, trying to get everybody together for the Dickerson Wood Family Reunion Group photograph. Last summer, the family traveled from New York, Virginia, and California to Creswell, North Carolina. Four generations made that trip.
Cheese.
Michelle Lanier spoke at that reunion last summer, and she's kept close watch this summer as new families make memories there.
I have really been honored that we have been one of the few public spaces that where people can say, I need to get out of the house. I need to seek some solace in a landscape, and I need to connect myself to some historic narratives. I mean, everything from the walking trails at Bentonville Battlefield to the apple orchards at Horn Creek. I'm a descendant of the enslaved people of Stagville. When I walk that land, it is a way for me to reflect upon and pay homage to my ancestors. Those grounds at Horton Grove are sacred to me. But yes, we have been receiving people on our grounds for months now, and we have been so careful, but also really just honored to be able to provide people. For me, the power of connecting land and the power of place and the power of story, it's been really important to me. This has been an enlightening time. It's been a time that I've been increasingly reflecting upon the role of the memory keepers as we respond to the outrage over the shooting and paralysis of Jacob Blake, the murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and so many others. What is our role? What are our roles as the keepers of memory for a state and for a people? These are complicated stories, but they're ones that help us to understand some of the roots of systemic racism. And I think that that is such an important role that our historic sites can play. So one of my first steps was to put out an open letter, really declaring my own personal commitment and our division's commitment to saying names, to recognizing that Black Lives Matter, to holding ourselves accountable to a higher standard of inclusion, true inclusion. So yes, we've been extremely busy with the work of recalibrating our priorities, understanding that honestly, many of my colleagues in historic sites have been working for decades in this regard, but we're turning up the volume.
Now the state's historic sites are opening more doors to visitors. Governor Roy Cooper's Phase 2.5 reopening plan allows visitor centers and museums to welcome back guests at limited capacity. This is good news for Whit Tuttle, Executive Director of Visit NC. North Carolina's tourism industry has been hit hard by the pandemic. No conventions, no arena concerts, no family reunions.
It's been a pretty terrible summer, really disastrous numbers in a lot of ways for the industry. Tourism is a $25 billion industry in North Carolina, and we've lost about $7 billion in visitor spending so far due to COVID. About one in every nine people in North Carolina is employed in the tourism industry. We had seen more than 50% unemployment. Now we think it's down around 25%, but still historically and remarkably high. And so when you take those people and you take a quarter of them unemployment, a lot of others are underemployed right now. So they're doing their jobs, but their jobs aren't quite the same. They're not getting the hours, they're not getting the amount of pay they're used to. It's a challenge. And when you look at the fact that, this may not completely come back for months, if not longer, it's potentially really devastating for the economy.
But Tuttle says recovery is starting to happen. While fewer out-of-state visitors may be coming, he says more people in-state are traveling locally. Quick getaways to nearby places where they can relax or work remotely. As a result, vacation rental numbers are up.
We hit the wall in March and it just basically shut down. And then it's sort of been this long, slow climb back toward what could be considered normal. The interesting thing, I think, in this recovery is that the rural areas seem to be doing better. Whereas for the last few years, the rural areas have been lagging behind the urban areas. That's sort of flip-flop because of this. And the rural areas, I think, are seeing a little more people getting there because they want to get out, they want to get away. That's sort of become more of a popular to the destination than some of our urban areas. And of course, there are no meetings or conventions going on, not a lot of business travel going on in the state. And so that affects the urban areas more as well.
I think of that almost $7 billion loss. How do you even begin to make that up? Or if you're not even thinking about making it up, I mean, that's just gone.
Yeah, I think so. It's a good question. We have to be really careful and try not to make it all up at once, because it's bad enough that we've lost this business. But what we're also seeing is that visitors don't want to go to places that have outbreaks, COVID outbreaks. So if we tried to get everybody to rush back too quickly and they didn't do it the right way, we'd be in danger of causing even more damage down the road. So we've tried to be very careful, very methodical in how we're opening and how we're opening back up and getting people to travel in the right way. All our office right now is focused on a program called Count On Me NC. And it's all about visitors doing the right things when they travel and businesses doing the right things to be able to welcome those visitors in a safe and socially distant and way that prevents the reintroduction of the virus.
Whit Tuttle is the executive director of Visit NC. More in a moment.
I'm Anita Rao, a host at WUNC. A lot of my job is asking difficult questions and digging deeper for the answers, even when it gets uncomfortable. It's the trust and understanding that's built when a conversation gets into awkward territory that drives my new podcast, Embodied. It's impolite conversations, intimate connections, and important discoveries in every episode. Listen and subscribe today on your favorite audio app.
When I think of African American history in North Carolina and storytelling at its finest, I think of my friend Randall Keenan. The professor of English and comparative literature at UNC Chapel Hill died recently at his home in Hillsboro. The writings from this, quote, poor black boy from the swamps of eastern North Carolina would leave you smiling and then begging for a breath. I love his fiction and nonfiction, his take on race and hate, his analysis of great thinkers. But most of all, I love to hear him talk about food.
I did say sweet potato and not yam. The yam is a product of Africa and Asia. The sweet potato is a New World root.
That's Randall Keenan on the podcast Gravy. He was reading from a talk he first delivered in 2018 at a symposium hosted by the Southern Foodways Alliance. He hones in on chapter 13 of Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man with the visible yam.
By now, we have gotten well into the meat of the story. And, like Don Quixote, our hero is coming to some self-illumination. Where 1,369 light bulbs could not help him, a particular edible root would come to the rescue. "Get your hot-baked Carolina yams," calls out a street vendor. At the corner, the old man, wrapped in an army overcoat, his feet covered with many gunny sacks, his head in a knitted cap, was puttering with a stack of paper bags. I saw a crude sign on the side of the wagon proclaiming, "Yams!" as I walked flush into the warmth thrown by the coals that glowed in a grate underneath.
Now, don't get yams confused with sweet potatoes, because when most people say yams, they're really talking about the sweet potato. But as Randall mentioned, each has its own origin and can mean very different things to different people.
For me, the hallmark of food in literature, raised to the level of art, is food interacting with character, food as character, food doing stuff, food being stuff. Just as it happens with our flesh and blood, our mouths and our bellies and our memories. The best writers, the better writers, know that food is identity. Food is alive. Food is us.
Thanks, Randall. Randall Keenan was 57.
I will be what I will be. I create what I create. I am what I am. Bon appetit, brothers and sisters.
That's it for this episode of Test It. I'm Leonida Inge. Charlie Shelton Ormond is our producer. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.